Where do the misfits go when they want to fit in? Cause I'm feeling alone. Where do the oddballs roll and the psychos swim? Cause I want to fit in.
Welcome back to The Everyday Actor. I am your host, Emma Dayton Peterson, and this is episode 7. I'm really excited about today's episode because it's so in with the times. We are all still in quarantine, as you all know, and today we get to hear from voiceover artist Aiden Rudd. Voiceover has become such a big part of so many actors' lives during quarantine because it's the one industry in entertainment that hasn't really slowed down all that much. So a lot of us are sitting at home trying to figure out how to get into voiceover, what equipment we need, how to start a studio at home, and really just the steps to even begin in this world. So today I hope you get a little bit of insight into what the voiceover world looks like. Enjoy.
I feel like because it's a voiceover little podcast for this episode, it should just be all different accents. Why not, right? Just switch through the whole time.
Oh yeah, totally.
Well, welcome to my podcast. How are you doing, Aiden?
Doing okay. Just, you know, keeping on, you know?
Yeah, especially during quarantine. How are you keeping yourself busy?
Honestly, VO hasn't really slowed down that much. It was slowing down at the start, but basically it was this sort of case of like, okay, all the studios are closed. Everybody has to make a home studio. So like once I finished building that, then it was like, okay, now you can work again kind of thing.
So what do you have in your home studio? That's so exciting.
Well, I bought a new interface. I'm currently plugged into that right now. It's an SSL2. I basically completely renovated what I'm working with because I'm in my closet, essentially. And
it's like a big closet.
It's not as big as it looks. Like to the left of me right here is basically the wall. Like, yeah. Basically, I completely retrofitted the whole thing. I put a bunch of like mass loaded vinyl on the walls and then a bunch of acoustic foam all over that and just did that kind of stuff, carpeted it and all that kind of stuff, you know.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, it looks really cool. I like the red and black.
Thanks. That's kind of my thing. Yeah.
So I don't know if you have gotten a chance to kind of listen to the podcast at all. So just basically I'm gearing it towards people who are kind of trying to get into the industry, break into it a little bit to kind of give basic information of like, where do you begin or what does the everyday life of an actor who's not a star look like? We're all stars, but I mean, not like celebrity status, can't walk down the street, you know?
Yeah, no, I feel you.
So for your journey, how did you get into voiceover? When did that all start for you?
That happened about 9 years ago in like 2011. At that point, I was still in community college, had no declared major, had no idea what I wanted to do with my life kind of thing. I was running a YouTube channel where I reviewed movies. It was not very well made. But it kind of got me into like my like anime fandom clique kind of thing at my college. And then one year they were all going to Anime Expo. They asked if I wanted to go. I was like, sure, I could shoot something for the channel there maybe. And then they brought up, hey, there's a voice acting competition there. And it was something called AX Idol. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. I did impressions at the time. I've been doing impressions since I was a little kid. So I was like, sure, I'll try it out. Tried it out one time, and it kind of like lit a spark and met the whole community, and everybody was super, it's a very not toxic community, very like supportive. Everybody's kind of got each other's back kind of thing. And it just kind of seemed like where I wanted to be and what I wanted to do. So changed my major to theater to get better at the acting side of it and then just kind of built from there. So yeah.
Very cool. So once you graduated school with your theater degree, what was your first step?
If there was a mistake I made when I first graduated, it was that I tried to rush things a little too much. I was basically just like, okay, got the degree, got to make the demos now, go. I remember specifically, like, I was like, okay, I'm going to make my animation demo and my commercial demo. And I asked everybody, like, who's your pick for this? Who's your pick for this? And there were a couple names that came back. Animation, I was kind of ready on because I had already done some anime work by that point, just random dubbing things here and there. But commercial stuff was something that I had, like, no practice in at all. And so I was like, wait, I should probably take like one commercial class before I make the demo. I take the class with a guy named Bill Holmes, who has been like the biggest supporter for my career. And that first class, we finish it. We go to get margaritas after the class. And I'm talking about how I have this appointment to get my demo made. And he just looks me in the eye and goes, a demo? You're not ready for a demo. And I'm just like, what? And he goes, yeah, my son's better than you, and he's not even an actor.
You're like, oh, shit, okay.
So I just trained a bunch more in commercial and eventually got to the point where I could make a demo, and he actually made it. But, yeah, it's been kind of a ride since then, but, yeah.
So you were looking into making a demo before you had the experience. What were the demo? Where do you get the – what does that look like?
So a voiceover demo kind of shows off like some of your best traits, some of what you can do, a lot of what your best stuff is. But the other thing is like, and this is something that everybody should know. It's something that luckily I didn't fall into this trap because I was too lazy to get one done when I was in college. and that is, you should not make one until you can compete. And because the thing is that like, people will hire you with no demo. They won't hire you with a bad one.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. And it's basically just kind of like a little sampler of a bunch of things, usually like a minute to a minute 15 long. And it's like the animation ones tend to be a little more cartoony and character-y if you want. The commercial ones are a lot more like your natural sound, like here's my this pitch and here's my this pitch and here's my this pitch and like stuff like that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then obviously you don't need video for this for the reel. It's just audio.
It's just audio. And because of that, it doesn't all like I know like with film reels, it tends to be like stuff that you've actually worked on. Whereas with audio demos, it's quote unquote assumed that it's what you've worked on, but it doesn't have to be. And honestly, my reels are all completely fabricated for the real things. Like, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So would you recommend getting your reel done like you did by a professional?
Yes, absolutely. Because you want it to, again, you want that illusion of this is a real thing that I worked on to be going through it. And you want it to sound professional. You want to sound as good as possible. Because if it sounds like crap and you don't know how to like, and if you don't know sound design, for example, and you don't really know how to edit these things together, or if you just kind of like half-ass put it together, it's going to show and it's not going to look good is basically.
Right.
Yeah. It's like if you had a reel done, you want it to look as good as you can possibly make it look kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in that first class, the commercial class you took, what are some of like the key things you took from it?
I mean, I'd imagine for on camera, it's kind of similar, whereas like everything is casual, conversational, just kind of like you're sitting with your friends, kind of like, just like, hey, you know, this beer's pretty good. You should try this beer. Just kind of like that kind of attitude. Very just relaxed.
So it's very similar to like a commercial acting class because the acting is fully there for voiceover. Some people think it's not.
Yeah, that's... Oh, that's a thing. It's just a matter of like what you're most comfortable with. Voiceover for a lot of people can be more difficult than on camera because like you don't have your body to express yourself. For me, it was a little less difficult actually because I was always super in my head about what I was doing with my body and now I don't have to think about that anymore.
True. That's a bright side to it.
Yeah.
So how did you know you wanted to do, once you started doing theater and acting, you still knew you wanted to do voiceover?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's mostly just like what fits my skill set the best. And, you know, I've always liked, like, I love video games. I love anime. I love cartoons, stuff like that. Like, and that's just kind of the world where my mind or center or whatever lives in, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So once you did the reels, what was your next step?
So I got the animation one done and started submitting to all these different studios, whether they be dubbing or studios or casting agencies, whether they be dubbing ones or video game ones or.
And how did you submit for those?
Lots of different ways. You either, a lot of it is just like having friends in the industry, talking to them, knowing who's good to talk to, who cast this thing, who created that thing, who did the work on this, whatever thing. And just kind of finding your way in through there, knowing the names of the major players helps a lot. I'd imagine, like, again, for on camera, like, you'd probably like look at the end credits to, like, say, a movie that you'd want to be in or with a director that you'd want to work with, see who the casting person is and try to get in with them somehow.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah. We go on IMDb Pro mostly.
Yeah.
Find all the info. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's very similar. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I interrupted you.
No, you good. You good.
Okay, so you started sending out your materials.
Mm-hmm. Sending stuff out, started getting in with certain places, had a little more difficulty getting in with others. And there were also like these like websites, like there's like the there's like some voiceover equivalents to like your Backstage and your Actors Access or whatever. That's like, there's like Voice 123, which is there's Voices and Voice 123 and stuff like that, which are good places to start off with, but not to stay in because the rates are kind of bad. But I mean, through those, like, I got my first video game job, which was on a game called Shadowverse. And then once you get one job, then that helps you get another job, because then you could go, hey, I was in this game, or hey, I was in that game, and that kind of snowballs as the resume builds, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. And then, yeah.
So do you have representation in the voiceover world?
I do. I am with Aperture Talent. They are a subsidiary of the Wilhelmina Modeling Agency. Yeah.
How did you get them?
Funny enough, so that commercial coach that I mentioned earlier sometimes does these like meet the pros-ish kind of nights, which a lot of organizations do those. But his, I like the best because he involves margaritas.
Oh man, that would get me in the door.
Oh yeah. He calls it margaritas, mojitos, and microphones.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he usually either brings in agents or casting directors. Sometimes it's just a coach that people want to work with a lot. And at one of those, he brought in, it was three people. It was this woman named Jill Kershaw, who is a casting director for Sound and Fury. For Sound and Fury Talent or whatever. I can't remember what the last word after Sound and Fury is. I've worked with them a few times. And then there was an agent named Michaela Hicks. She was with one of the biggest agencies in town called Atlas. I believe she's now with another agency called Vox, which is another big agency. Vox actually represents J.K. Simmons for voiceover. And the last one was Brandy, who was an agent for, was the senior agent for Aperture Talent, which is the one that I'm with. And I went into the booth with her directing me. And Brandy is just a really fun person to be around. She kind of has, and I mean this in the most loving way possible, she has like fun wine mom energy. And she's. She's just very entertaining and like, but also like crazy hardworking. She's found me some really good stuff to read for. And that night it just went really well. Did my reads. She was really interested. And like within a week, she was like, I want to sign you, blah, blah, blah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So what have been some of your favorite gigs that you've gotten?
Commercial wise, I did some radio spots for Credit Karma last year that were really fun to work on. I did some TV spots for Spectrum a couple years ago that were really cool. Video game wise, one of my most recent releases, which has kind of been the one that's like quadrupled my Twitter following, was a game called Grand Blue Fantasy Versus, which is a fighting game in which I voice the main villain, Beelzebub. And He's just sort of down here. Yes.
Ooh, how fun.
Yes.
So when you're recording for a game like that, what's the process like?
So that game was interesting because it was a translation. Normally with a game, what it is you basically go into the room, they pull up a giant Excel sheet. It has a million lines and you just kind of go through them one by one. But the thing is with voiceover, very, 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 very rarely do you get the script before you record. You basically just see it on the day and have to do it on the day.
Okay.
It's a lot of cold reading. It's a lot of just like improv, that kind of stuff. I remember seeing a while back, it was like there was an article about the new Final Fantasy VII remake. And the article was like, these voice actors had to do this while only receiving the script the day that they got there. And I was like, yeah, and the sky is blue. That's normal.
You're like, yeah, that's my everyday life.
Yeah. So the difference with Grand Blue was because it was a translation, they also had a bunch of time codes, and they basically had to play the Japanese version for me and then have me get that line with the performance that they wanted in the exact same time frame as the Japanese one.
Right. So that it still moved like in their mouths and everything.
Like down to like a tenth of a second. Like, wow. It's crazy. Yeah.
So I'm assuming you had to do a lot of takes for each line?
It's one of those things that's really hard at first, but once you get in the groove of it, like you sort of get the rhythm for it kind of thing. A lot of music training can help with that. I actually studied a lot of music before I got into theater. And it's just like knowing that rhythm, knowing the music of language, and just kind of like being able to like know how time works, I guess.
Right.
And that's kind of dubbing in a nutshell, but yeah.
What's the audition process like? Do you go into a studio, or are you doing mostly essentially at home self-tapes?
I mean, right now it's nothing but at home.
Right, but, right.
But normally I would go into a studio for an audition like 1 or 2% of the time. Almost everything was at home.
Okay.
Almost everything. Yeah.
Are most of your auditions through your agent now, or are you still looking online for yourself?
Honestly, most of my stuff is stuff that I still find on my own. My agent sends me a lot of good stuff, and I actually do have representation out in Texas too, and they'll send me stuff as well. It's mostly just me finding opportunities for myself still. Like, I've found a lot of video, like Grand Blue, I got on my own. I got in a game called Warframe on my own. I recently did some spots for Hull's Cough Drops. I got that on my own.
How are you finding those?
Different websites. It's a lot of the stuff that I was saying earlier before. It's like those websites, knowing the casting people, looking into how to get in with them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
So for someone who wanted to create their own at-home studio as a beginner voiceover person, what would you recommend equipment-wise that they would need?
The first thing I would say is the space is the most important thing. Honestly, the mic is probably like third on the list of what's the most important things. The space you record in is number one, because if there's any bounce, it does not matter how good of a mic you have, you're going to hear it. In fact, if you have a better mic, you'll probably hear it more.
Right. True.
And then, so the space, like, if you can't afford, like, a bunch of acoustic foam, like what I had to buy, I mean, you're not going to get broadcast quality, but, like, for auditions and stuff, I would say maybe, like, some moving blankets could work. Having clothing in your closet helps a lot. Maybe get a rug for the floor of it, or just some carpeting or anything, just to kind of, like, make it so you're not bouncing off the floor. You basically want as few opportunities for sound waves to bounce as you possibly can get. And then I wouldn't use a USB mic. Like, I wouldn't use, for voiceover, I probably wouldn't use something like the Yeti or the Snowball or stuff like that.
I have a Yeti and I like it, but when I am doing voiceover and everything, I can hear the difference like between your mic and mine. This is my podcast and I'm going to sound less professional. So it's like, the Blue Yeti is great, but it's not, it is a condenser with a USB. It's not
perfect. Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, like even the mic I'm using right now, I already ordered a replacement for it that I'm getting tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Sounds like great. This one's good, but like I ordered like this one mic. It was called the S87 that people are like, oh, it's a clone of the mic that every studio uses, except it's $600, whereas the rest of them are $3,600.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. Studio equipment's expensive.
It is.
But yeah, I would get a mic and an interface separately as opposed to the USB mic. And the reason for that is essentially if you have the USB mic, it's trying to do both the job of the interface and the microphone at once. And that's just a lot to expect from one machine. Whereas if you have two machines doing it, it just simplifies the process overall for the electronic system. For you, it complicates it.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah. And then for the interface, the one that's like selling like crazy right now, it's the one that I actually am using right now. And it sounds like the difference between this interface and my old one is night and day. And my old one cost about $100. This one costs about $230, but it sounds like it's about $700. It is the SSL2. It's fantastic. The mic I'm using right now is an MXL880. It's good. And yeah, you know, it's perfectly fine for this kind of stuff.
It'll get the job done.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And what's the importance of headphones?
Honestly, you usually don't want ones like the ones that I'm wearing right now. The ones I'm wearing right now are from like a gaming headset setup.
Okay.
But usually you want like the really professional ones that are comfortable because that's important. But those also can run a bit of money. But, you know, if you're on a budget, I mean, stuff is going to be expensive no matter what.
Yeah. But, I mean, you're going to, yeah. If you want to do a little at home studio, you're going to be spending $500 at least.
Oh, yeah. And mine is quite a bit more than that.
Yeah.
Too.
If you're with all the paneling is expensive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. The paneling, like the foam pan, like just the panel, like the foam panels that are around everything, like the acoustic foam panels and the stuff under it together was probably over $400. Just that. Like, yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's to get enough paneling to cover everything, it's a lot. And then but it's important. So,
oh, it is.
Yeah. So, until you are able to afford that, there's ways around it, but recommend it.
There are. It's, you know, I mean, a good beginner's interface that a lot of people seem to like is the Scarlett 2i2. That one seems to be pretty popular. It's not terrible. It's just that it's not going to get you broadcast quality or at least near broadcast quality. It's definitely good enough for auditions, though.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So most of the time you're in a studio, right? How often do you have someone actually, besides quarantine time, how often do you actually have people ask you to send in your own things from home?
The thing is that like, so most of the time, if it's something that I'm sending from home, I mean, aside from like what's right now, most of the time it's something that's like kind of like a small project that I'm doing just for like a small amount of cash most of the time. Not always. I did the hall spot. I did one of the hall spots from my closet before all this started.
Okay.
I did this game called Warframe from my old house. But like most of the time you'll go into a studio for like the bigger stuff. So that's just kind of how it works out.
Okay. And
yeah,
voiceover, are you all part of SAG and everything? Is that all mixed in? I'd actually don't know.
VO is under SAG.
Okay.
Especially since the SAG-AFTRA merger.
Got it.
Like, ever since then, like, VO is completely under SAG. And SAG is definitely improving they're definitely improving how they handle voiceover because it used to not be as big an industry as it is now, kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, especially with all with technology and animations getting bigger and everything. And podcasting, too.
Mm-hmm.
Podcasting is, the next thing. I'm excited about it. I love not even about my podcast, but like I love podcasts. So I'm excited that it's getting bigger.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. And they just fill so many different like roles. Like it could be like a talk sort of thing, or it could be like a lecture, or it could even be like a radio drama, like all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I've been going through Backstage. They included a new voiceover profile. So during quarantine, and there's so many podcast dramas. I didn't even know. I have never really gone to look for stories on podcasting, but it's out there.
I feel you. Yeah, funny enough, that actually brings up something that's been talked about a lot in the VO circles, and that's that on-camera people are going to be gunning for a lot of the VO jobs now.
Yeah.
With the whole situation.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's okay. You and I aren't competition.
Hey, you know what? Bring it on.
Yeah. Okay, I'm coming for you. Soon I'll be taking over your little at-home studio. What advice would you give to someone who comes to you as a young actor saying they want to get into voiceovers?
A lot of things. So this reminds me of, this isn't necessarily what I would say, but it's a sentiment that I kind of like. And it's going to sound really harsh, but trust me.
Yeah, lay it on me.
Basically, so there's a pretty well-known director in our field. I'm not going to say who it is, because again, it comes off a little harsh. A couple of my friends went up. It's a director that I've worked with, by the way, and he's probably the best director I've ever worked with. He's amazing. But a couple of my friends went up to him at a con a few years back, and they asked him, basically, we're getting into voiceover. What advice would you have? Blah, 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 blah. And the guy looked at them and just said, quit. And then a couple years later, they had been going into it, and they met up with him again, and they talked about that. And he said, oh yeah, I tell that to everybody who's like trying to get into this. And they go, why is that? And he goes, well, if I tell you to quit, and like there's even a part of your brain that doesn't want to do this, you'll quit. But if I tell you to quit and you're like just gunning for it, that's just going to light a fire under you. Like, oh, he thinks I should quit. Well, I'll show him, blah, 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 blah.
You know, I actually really love that. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great motivator. We were talking about that with Jack, right? Jack McDonald.
Yeah. So, I've been seeing a lot of his stuff. Yeah, he's killing it right now.
So we had him on episode three. So whoever's listening, episode three, we had similar advice that we were talking about when people say, like, if you don't want this more than absolutely everything else in the world, don't do it. It's too hard. Well, it's too up in the air.
Yeah, it's too hard, too up in the air. And the other thing is that, like, if there's even anything else that you want to do, your brain's gonna want to do that more than work on this thing.
Right. Because
the thing is that, like, everybody you're competing against, this is their thing. This is what they gun for all the time. They are entertainers, and that's all they eat, sleep, shit, and breathe. That's all. And if you can't compete with that, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not trying to like be like, oh, give up on your dreams, blah, 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 blah. But like, I'm just being upfront. Like,
right. And it's important to realize and to acknowledge, like, we all at some point will have the doubts. We all at some point will rethink this over. But if at the end of the day, this is what you want to do, you got to make it happen.
Oh, yeah. I mean, basically, the reason I do this is because it's the only thing I can do.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can do anything else in the world and be happy, do it.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Awesome.
Pretty much. Oh, yeah.
So what are, just kind of to wrap everything up, what are some of the biggest takeaways from, I guess, from your time in voiceover? Is that too broad?
I could go for a bit. First off, so the VO community, it has its problems. You're not going to have any community of people that has like zero problems, all sunshine and rainbows, blah, 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 blah. But of every community I've ever been a part of in my life, the VO one is like the least toxic, has the least amount of problems, is the most supportive, completely, not even close, like just so great. And the resources are there, especially considering the fact that like one of the really cool things about voiceover is that the biggest names in the field, a lot of them teach. Like, on the level of, like, if you were to take an on-camera acting class with, like, I don't know, Samuel L. Jackson or Emma Thompson or something like that. Like, if you like, on that level. My first animation coach was a guy by the name of Richard Horvitz. Richard is best known for being the voice of Invader Zim. He's also been in Angry Beavers. He one of the main characters. He was also Billy in The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. He's been in a million different things. I've taken classes with Bob Bergen. He's the voice of Porky Pig. Like,
and are all these classes in LA or the LA area?
They are all in LA, but some of them are willing to do remote workshops.
Okay.
Yeah, like over Skype or something like that. Even Bill, my commercial instructor, like he mostly does commercials, but like he's in Fallout, he's in Rick and Morty, he's in a bunch of stuff too.
Very cool.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that like the resources are all there. And the thing is what I like to say with like voiceover and acting and all that kind of stuff is that in terms of, it's not that any one of the steps is like super difficult to do. Like, we're not, like, building a rocket. We're not, like, planning a power grid. We're not, like, doing some, like, super intellectually tasking or super, like, physically, like, stressful thing. But there are a lot of the steps as opposed to... So, basically, it's more an endurance test than a can-you-do-this-one-thing kind of thing most of the time.
Right.
And also, just all the training in the world. Start with theater. I'm not just saying that because I did. I'm not just saying that because Emma did. I'm saying that because honestly, there isn't really another learning voiceover and on camera is more like learning a specialty of acting, but theater is kind of where you learn how to do it because it's the most intimate. It's the one that allows you time with your scene partner. You don't have as many technical requirements. It's just that's how you learn to act and then you learn the technical stuff later.
Right. Kind of thing. Yeah. Theater is how you learn. When one of the first things I learned in college is acting is basically what it means to be human and figuring that out. And you figure that out in theater more than film because you don't. There's too many time constraints and there's too much worry about the picture and the framing and the technical movements, but that in theater you don't have. So I also highly recommend having some sort of background in theater.
It's ultimately like a theater class will teach you how to act and then an on-camera class will teach you how to act with a camera.
Yeah, how
and
to use that.
And a voiceover class will teach you how to act with a microphone kind of thing.
Cool.
And yeah, I mean, even most people in my field will recommend that. Like, I worked with a mocap coach who's like one of the biggest mocap coaches in this country. And he was like, take theater classes. That's the way you learn how to do mocap for the most part.
Mocap motion capture?
Yeah, I have not done it yet.
Okay.
One of my roommates has done it, but I have not.
I want to do it at some point. It looks so cool.
There are a lot of really cool classes for that, but
Okay, well, awesome. We heard your advice from the teacher or director. But what's your advice? Because you said you wouldn't tell that. So what would you say?
So my advice would basically be, I'm going to draw from some life experience here. So basically at some point in your pursuit of this, you are going to have a come to Jesus moment. Everything is going to go wrong. You are going to be in the most miserable place in your life. And life is going to ask you, is this really what you want to do? For me, I was a sophomore at Cal State Fullerton. I was actually denied entry into the college's acting program, essentially. Then I was like, well, at least my anime career is building because I was kind of like really building up to be something big in the anime world. Had a session for the biggest role of my career at that point. The whole thing cratered. I was recast. And then another show I was in with that studio, I was also recast at the same time.
Oh no.
So everything went wrong all at once. But that was kind of the moment of like, is this what you want to do? Because this is the worst it's going to get.
And so that at that point, you thought, yeah, I have to keep doing this.
I basically thought, well, I'm upset, but I can handle it kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. We can always handle it. That's what we have to remember. There's a lot of rejection, but we can handle it.
Mm-hmm. And I still work with that studio that recast me now.
You don't want to burn that bridge. Like if you're recast or anything, you don't want to be like, well, fuck guys.
No, it's honestly, it was a lot of like, hey, remember that I exist kind of thing.
Don't forget
which
about
is a
me.
Lot. Yeah, that's a lot of this job.
It's true. You have to remind them you're there basically without annoying them.
Yeah. And then once they start using you a lot, then you don't have to do that as much.
Yeah, exactly. At one point, they're like, okay, we know your name. We know you're there. Shut up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, this has been great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Faux show. Anytime. Anytime.
Thank you, Aiden, so much for coming on the podcast. I learned so much about the voiceover world, and I know all of our listeners did as well. And actually, since this interview, I have updated a lot of my equipment. Instead of the Blue Yeti, I am now using a Samson Q2U, which is a dynamic mic. It has the option for a USB or XLR. I have XLR cables that are attached to my new interface. I did get the Scarlett 2i2, which we did talk about in this episode. It is not broadcast quality, but great for auditions, just as Aiden said. And perfect for podcasting, so it really just depends on what your needs are. Right now, I am using the USB function. I do not have it hooked up to the interface, so next time I'll show you the interface and see what difference there is in the sound. If you have any other technical questions or anything regarding equipment, please let me know. You can follow us on Instagram at everydayactorpod. I also am always willing to get emails, questions, if you want to just chat about something. Our email is everydayactorpod@gmail.com. Please feel free to reach out. Thank you so much for listening. I want to hear all about your new voiceover careers, and I will talk to you next time. Our theme music was brought to you by the lovely Alyssa. You can hear more of her music on Spotify, which I have linked below in the show notes. I wanna fit in.